Joining me here in studio is the Mayor of Cork County, Mary Linehan Foley. Mary's going to chat a bit to us there about the mother and baby homes. Mary, you yourself were born in Besborough in 1966. Now, luckily for you, you were one of the better stories to come out of there.
Yeah, that's right, Elizabeth. I suppose I've been known to publicly state that anyway, that I was one of the lucky ones, and that I have a good news story in that, but quite a number of women and children that were born in mother and baby homes don't have the good news story that I have. And I suppose with the report that was launched last week, and all these women that gave their life stories and their what happened to them to the relevant departments, the report, I suppose, they were looking forward in a sense to seeing the report and seeing what would be offered from the state for them. But a lot of them, I know, are bitterly disappointed with the report. But I suppose in saying that, the one, I suppose, flicker of light in the whole lot of it, Elizabeth, would be that people are talking about it now. It's not brushed under the carpet anymore like it was for a number of years. And, you know, people felt embarrassed, ashamed or whatever. And I think the sense of that is gone. They now know this was not their fault. This was society at that particular time. And, you know, that they can hold their heads up, basically, and keep their heads up now to know that, look, there was an issue there. There's still quite a lot of issues there. But at least now we're talking about it.
Okay, and Mary, for people maybe that don't know, do you want to tell us a little bit about your story?
Well, I suppose my story is, there's not many, I suppose, that don't know, but look, I was born in Besborough in 1966. My birth mother was from Waterford, Rena. I'm lucky enough now that I have contact with her and I'm able to be in contact with her, but that took a number of years as well. And that's something else, I suppose, I can touch on as well, is what the majority of people want is their birth records. They want their health records and they want to know exactly where they came from. And I think that's a human right for everybody to want to know where they came from. But I was born in Besborough, as I say, in 1966. And in them times, there was quite a lot of adoptions. I was born through the Sacred Heart Convent in Besborough and the St. Anne's Adoption Society, which would be Catholic run, which would be, I suppose, very, very common back in them days. That was the adoption society. But I was lucky enough, I was adopted by Paddy and Maureen Linehan. I had a good life. They were very, very good to me and I looked at them as my mother and father and I still do. But yeah, it was a good story in the sense that when I got to about 18, 19, when I was pregnant on my own daughter, Gemma, I then realised that I needed my health records and that. So that was kind of where my story went, in the sense that I needed to know basically my history, whether there was that in hereditary in it, because they're the first things you're asked in hospital when you're pregnant and when you go up to have your first child. They say, what's in the family? What was your mother's labour like? Is there any diabetes or is there anything, simple things like that. So for obvious reasons, I didn't know any of this about my birth family or my birth mother or my birth father for that matter. So it was then, I suppose, I started wondering, where did I come from exactly? And, you know, you could be meeting people on the street. Am I related to them? Am I not? So it's something that's always in the back of your head when you're adopted, I suppose, is where do I come from? Who am I?
Did you find it hard to access your records?
Very, very hard. And I suppose, look, going back to how I went about it, I found myself pregnant when I was 17, when I was doing my leaving cert. And at that particular time, it was 1984, there was the Anne Lovett case down in West Cork, where a girl gave birth to a baby and they both died behind the grotto. I don't know, do you remember that story now? Because it's quite a few years before your time. But at that particular time, there was I suppose, people going around from Cura at the time, which was a pregnancy group that would help unmarried mothers, and also people from Besborough and different homes saying that, you know, don't let it get to that. If you are pregnant, there are phone numbers and there are places to go. So I was doing my leaving cert and I was in the Loretta Convent, and there was myself and a few more of my friends were in that class on that particular day that there was a priest and a nun visited. And they said, look, this is the way it is. If you do find yourself in trouble or whatever, that's what they called it back then, there's the number for Besborough. It is an unmarried mother's home is what they called it. So I decided, because I knew I was pregnant and I wasn't after telling my parents, that I would give them a ring and I'd have a backup plan for, you know, if the sugar hit the fan, basically, and that I had to find somewhere to go, because it's a terrifying, and I can just imagine in the 60s how terrifying it was for these girls and these women. But even in 1984, when I found myself in that position, it was frightening and it was terrifying, because the systems and the supports weren't in place back then that there are now. You know, now it's a touch of a button and you can get whatever supports you need. But so basically I hitched up the road with a friend of mine to Besborough after that, after they visited the class, and I told him above there, I went in and I told him my story and whatever, and the nun that was there at that particular time was Sister Sarto, which is the nun that is still in charge of all these records from Besborough to this day. And she said, where were you born? And I said, look, I was adopted. She said, do you know where you were adopted from? I said, I don't, because it never actually entered my head before then. And she said, we can look up in our records here. I said, I know it was Cork, but I'm not sure of the name. So she came back and she said, look, you were adopted from here in 1966. But she said, we can't give you any information on yourself or whatever. And I said to her on that day, that's not why I'm here, basically. I'm here to book a room in case I need it in the future. And which was quite funny now looking back. And it is, like, I laugh when I tell this story to people, even saying it to Gemma, my daughter, the other day. I said, you know, when I look back in 1984, thinking of going up to Besborough to book a room in case I'd know where to go. But look, it worked out fine for me in the sense that I went on to have my own daughter, Gemma. And I was fine. My mum and dad, Maureen and Paddy, were fine about it. They weren't very pleased, but they were fine about it. And I got a house. They rented a house downtown for me and that. And I moved out, moved in there with Gemma. And I suppose I moved on in my life from there since. But it probably set the seed when they told me, and when I found out that I was adopted from there. So a number of years later, I suppose I then met John and got married, and my life stabilised, because my life was quite unstable for a number of years. which people would be aware of, anyone that knows me would anyway. I wouldn't have been the quietest, I'd have been a bit wild, but look. So then my life stabilised, I married John, settled down, and I decided, I suppose, I think it was in Clara. Clara is in her 20s, so it was around 20 odd years ago that I decided, yeah, I'm in the right space now and I'm in the right peace of mind to go searching and to find out some bit of history about where I came from. So I then started making the phone calls, and it was Sister Sarto I was dealing with. And it's funny, I only pulled out the letters, I suppose, that I got the other day when the report was publicised, to have a look at when I started my search and where it went from them, from then and from the day I started. It wasn't easy, because there was no information to be given, because I suppose while my story was with my birth mother, she had left my birth cert for me if I ever needed it, but I didn't know that. You know, I have an adoption cert, and that was what you use when you're getting passports or whatever. It's different to a birth cert. It's your adoptive cert, and it's your adoption, and it's the legal one. So when I met Rena, she had told me she left my birth cert there if I ever needed it, but I didn't know that, obviously, at the particular time. So I went to Maureen and Paddy then, and I said to them, look, Mam and Dad, I'm going trying to find my birth mother, because I said, it's something I need to do. There's a jigsaw puzzle in my life, and I need to see and know where I came from. My children need to know where, you know, whether there's that in hereditary. And, you know, basically, I wouldn't have said it was playing on my mind, but it was always on my mind that I didn't know where I came from. So I started through St. Anne's Adoption Society. They wrote to me. I wrote to them, because that was the way it was done back then. There wasn't as many mobile phones or phones like that. Every second house had a phone, so we wouldn't have had one when my kids were growing up or that. So we would have used the neighbour's phone next door. So I gave their number anyway, and I wrote, and they wrote back to me, and they said they would look for her, but that they wanted a fee because they'd have to hire a private investigator. So I said fine. I think it was something like 80 or 90 quid at that time. So I got a postal order and I sent that off, and they wrote back and said the next time they'd be in the area that she came from, they'd look for it and get back to me. Which was, I thought, God, how could you say the next time you're in the area, yeah, you'll get back to strange. Me. So I left it for a number of months or whatever. But then I was like a dog with a bone, and I'm a bit like that in my work as well, even to what I do today. If I'm trying to do something or trying to find out something and I'm not getting the answers that I want, I'll keep chewing and chewing away at it. So I kept it was gnawing at me, and it wasn't sitting right with me. And I thought, right, maybe this person is dead or whatever. But if they are, you know, I need to know. So I'd say it was about a year and a half, maybe 2 years later, before I got any more contact back. And the contact I got back was, they were after finding my birth mother's family in Waterford, but that she was after emigrating after years straight after, as I found out later, after she had me, and that they would make contact with the family, but that if my birth mother didn't want contact with me, that would be the end of it, and that I had to prepare myself for that, because that is the law, and it still is the law. That's what a lot of adoptees are fighting for, the right to know where they came from. But the right is still with the mother, and you can understand the mother as well. If she's married and her husband doesn't know she had a child 40, 50 years ago. So like, there has to be, I suppose you'll have to get a happy medium there. And I think listening to Minister O'Gorman on that, they're trying to put legislation in place so that if I need to get information on my birth mother or whatever, that I can get it without disturbing her life if she doesn't want to be disturbed. But look, there's two sides to every type of story. But with my story, once they contacted a member of my birth mother's family, she said that she'd contact my birth mother, who was in London at the time, and that she'd get back to Sister Sarto. So she did. And my birth mother straight away wanted to meet with me, which is the good news story of it, because there's quite a lot of birth mothers that don't. They say no contact and they don't want that. And, you know, you have to look at their side of it as well. But that was, I'd say, 24 years ago. And then they would advise me to write to her first rather than meet with her. And they would also advise me to ring her, but not to meet face to face with her. This was Sister Sarto, and this was Besborough now. This was with the tracing where I went through. So that's what I did. I wrote to her. She wrote to me. She sent photographs. I was dying. I remember waiting for this photograph, because I always kind of had in my head, who do I look like? And, you know, where, you know, what do I look like? And do my children look like anybody? Or, you know, you go through them type of things. But I was waiting and waiting for the photograph, and she sent on a photograph, and I sent over photographs of the kids, of myself and whatever. And it was fine. Do you know, I won't say it was like on television, happy ever after, because it certainly wasn't that. It was a lot to take in. And it was, I suppose, as well, you're digging up a past, or you're you know, of a woman that found herself pregnant in the 60s, was put into a home and left in the home until somebody came to take her back out of it. And so you're dealing with a lot of her issues, and you're dealing with your own issues of meeting somebody that's a complete stranger.
And how was her experience in Besborough? Did you really talk about that?
We did. We talked loads about that after a while. With the first initial meeting was more about the kids and more about me, and how much that she missed me, and that from every day she thought about me. She married over in London. She had two boys. She's since divorced. But how she spoke about that, her life was never cut and dry after that. It just wasn't. Like, she had lots of issues in her life. Her marriage broke down. She found it hard to have relationships. You know, but she's tough as nails. She's tough. She's a tough woman. Like,
that's where you get it from.
I would consider her a very strong woman for what she went through. But her time in Besborough wouldn't have been great, but it wouldn't have been, I suppose, some of the horror stories that I'm reading in the reports wouldn't be anything to what Rena had. She was lucky. She said she got a job in the nursery in Besborough, and she loves children. She loved babies and always did. And she spent most of her life actually as minding children, you know. But she said she was lucky. Her job was in the nursery. So she said she was kept busy every day. But she told me the story of, I suppose, the day that I was born, which was the 22nd of July. And I was born around 20 past one in the afternoon. And she said that, like, she went into labour the day before, and they put you into a certain room for when you're in labour, and you're left there, and they come in and out and watch or whatever. But she said around 12 o'clock the doctor put his head around the corner, which she said was unusual, because there wasn't always a doctor in Besborough, but sometimes there would be a doctor that would call. And she said the nun that was with her said, "No, we're all right here," she said, because they gave her a different name. They gave her Catherine. Catherine is fine, you can move on.
Why did they give different names to the people?
So that nobody would know who they were. Okay. To keep it all a secret. So that's, you know, they all got a different name when they went in there, and they were known as, she was known as Catherine, as she says herself. But so the nun basically said to her, look, she was roaring, as she said, in labour, as you can imagine yourself. Anyone that has had a baby or been in labour would know. She was in pain and she was roaring, and the nun said to her, look, she said, you're paying now for the sin that you committed. And she said, you'll have your baby. But she said, you'd want to hurry on, because lunchtime It's coming up to lunchtime. It's fish and chips today. It's Friday. And once you have the baby, you can have your lunch. But if you go on any longer than lunch, you won't be getting your lunch. So come on, get this child out now. And she said she always remembers afterwards thinking the fish and chips were in her head all the time. You know, that was the thing that she thought about. And she thought, you know, let's do this. So she did. And she gave birth to me and healthy 8 pound odd baby. And she her job was in the nursery. So she said she was lucky. She got to spend every day with me. She breastfed me, which I think is horrendous for them. For anyone to expect anyone to breastfeed and then they're going to whip that child away from you because that's your bonding with your baby.
Did she have a choice about giving you up?
She had no choice, no. Okay. No. Her parents were embarrassed and that's why she went there. It was basically an affair that she had, or she met with somebody that she said she still loves to this day, but and he was promised at that time to somebody else. So her parents found out she was pregnant. They knew who she was pregnant by. They would have been big business people now. They would have been people that would have thought they were high in society type, and they were totally embarrassed. So she was put in there when she was 3 months pregnant, and she was left in there. I was born in July. She was still in there in September.
How old were you when you were adopted?
I was about 5 weeks.
Okay. So
but some things aren't adding up because on my birth cert it said I was registered in August, but yet she said to me she registered me in July, a week after I was born. So there's a lot of, I suppose, complicated stuff in it. She christened me Denise.
Okay.
But yet on my baptismal cert in Besborough that the priest and that the nuns gave me, I was christened Mary. So there's quite, there's bits that don't add up, you know. And like Rena is a 70 odd year old woman, but Rena is all there.
She's sharp, yeah.
Very, very sharp. You've met her.
Yeah.
Elizabeth, she is a sharp woman. There's no point in saying that she's 70 odd and that she doesn't remember. She remembers everything about everything. So like there's certain things that I suppose that don't add up. And there's a lot. And if that's my case and my story, which I'm very lucky with, imagine the stories of the girls that can't find their mams, the women that can't find their babies and were told they died.
And you see, that's the other side of it. A lot of these children that have been adopted don't want to know either, do they? They're happy with their parents they had and they don't want to know.
Yeah, they don't want
and
to know.
And that's their choice.
And that's
as
their
well.
Choice. And I always say that to everybody because I've quite a good few friends who are adopted. And I always say to them, it's something I wanted to know.
Yeah.
And, you know, listening.
And if Rena was different and she didn't want to know you, you'd have to just accept the choice.
I would have to accept that. And I would then. It is very, very hard. But I would then think that the health records should be made
available
for these girls, because that's something you need to know, you know. Like when you go to hospital, Elizabeth, and as we're getting older now, and I'm getting older myself, it's, for instance, Clara, we've a new baby in the family with the last 8 weeks, as I've four beautiful grandchildren. I'm blessed. But when they go up, they ask, well, how was your mum's labour? You know, how, and they do ask these health questions. So, you know, it was awful for me in my years of saying, God, I don't know, I was adopted. You know, I had different issues with health, not in major, thank God, over the years. And they used to say, well, is breast cancer in your mum's family or is ovarian cancer? And you're going, I don't know, you know.
Yeah, no,
and that is something that I suppose people that aren't adopted doesn't understand, because they've always known where they came from, you know. But again, going back to that report that was published, there's still a lot of unanswered questions.
Do you think the report was anything as did you expect more from it?
I did expect more from it. I expected, I suppose,
some
I know
blame
how,
to be taken.
Yes.
And
yes.
There wasn't really, like,
no,
was there?
No.
Kind and of they passed laid the book a bit.
They passed the book a bit. Like, I know, and I said that, and I gave another interview last week about it, and I said that I'm a Catholic. I've always been a Catholic. It's the way I was reared. And I understand, like I'm in politics, I understand politics as well. There are bad apples everywhere, and there are a lot more good apples, you know?
Yeah.
And I do not blame the current Catholic Church for this. I do not.
Yeah.
Because you cannot lay blame. If I'm to lay blame, and I'm not a person that lays blame on anyone anyway, but if you were to lay blame on anyone, they were right when they said it was society. It was. My birth mother's mother and father were embarrassed by her. They were embarrassed because she was pregnant. Why were they embarrassed? because society had it that way at that particular time. Get rid of her, put her into the home, nobody will know your business, and continue on in life. We know that doesn't work now. So the good thing about, I suppose, the report and about everything is everybody's discussing it now, and it's not that dirty secret anymore.
I mean, there were some stories there I read last week, like women that were over in England, and that a nun and a priest would come over and take them back.
But where were her parents?
I know.
Do you know what I mean? At the end of the day, where were her? And I said this to Rini, you know, I said, I get it, and I get she didn't want to give me up. And another, like, another part of it was when I was being adopted, they said to her, Rina, go into town and do the shopping. And they'd send him off on a bus in from Bedsburn to the city.
When
when she came back, I was gone. And like, I said, I get it. Come and, I can't even imagine how that would feel.
They never gave him a chance to even say goodbye. No. It's cruel.
It's cruel. And like, they were, in their eyes at that particular time, nuns and priests, these women were to pay for their sins as they thought they were after sinning. Why would you even think like that? Like, if you're, and I'm not going into it now because I'm not going to preach religion or preach anything else on your show, but if you are a good living person, and we've learned that, and I've tried to do the best I can over my life, if you're a good living person, you wouldn't hurt anyone, or you wouldn't be cruel to anyone in your lifetime.
No.
You know, with meaning to be cruel to anyone, you wouldn't do that.
It's hard to understand.
It's hard, very hard to understand.
But do you think this report has just left more questions for people?
I think it has left a lot of questions for people, and I think they didn't take into consideration quite a lot of women that gave their stories.
And as
bad as they were, they opened up and they gave their stories.
And I think they wanted to be recognised, and they wanted somebody to be held accountable for what was done to them, and they didn't get that. So
they didn't get
the report
that.
Is pointless to many of them.
Yes, it is pointless to many of them. But in saying that, and I've went further than the report itself, because I had to put it down at one stage because I thought, no, with COVID and everything else dragging you down, this was dragging me worse. So I just had to put some of it away. But the government's plans and what they plan to do is looking bright.
Okay.
But, you know, it's something I think that we have to make sure they follow up on, because quite a lot of the time they plan to do all these proposals and pass these legislations,
and
it doesn't happen unless you keep on top of them. So it's like, as I said at the beginning, a dog with a bone. You need to keep on top of it. The big one at the moment is Bessborough site. We have to keep on top of the city council to make sure that that site is excavated before any building happens up there. And that planning is up at the moment. I put a motion forward at Cork County Council level, because that was within Cork County Council's boundary till the new boundary changes. So now it's in the city, to make sure that this site would be excavated, to give these mothers some bit of closure of where their children are buried, so that they know they can grieve and they can go somewhere and they can remember these children that are buried in sites that nobody knows about. It's similar to what we have in North Abbey Cemetery at the moment. All somebody wants is a plaque to say, yes, baby A or baby B is buried here, and you've somewhere to go and grieve.
Yeah. I mean, it's just shocking to realise, like, Bessborough was only closed down in the 90s.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just unreal.
It is unreal. It is. And like, I suppose it, I knew it from the 80s, from my own story, as more of, you go up there for support if you were, as they call you, an unmarried mother. And that was what I had went there at the time for. But it still it still carries on to this day as support for mothers.
Yeah, and just one final thing I was reading there last week as well. A lot of them don't like them called mother and baby homes because they don't feel they were homes.
No, they don't. They feel they were more like institutions.
And you can understand that.
Of course you can, because home, if you think of your home and my home,
is where you're safe
and where you're
comfortable
and
relaxed.
And so a lot of these places, the majority of these places,
maybe
if we're being truthful,
maybe there should be a push to change the name.
Maybe there should be, you know, and I think that's for another day. But I am looking forward, in the sense that that's my job to do that anyway. But I am looking forward to the proposals that government have laid down over the next number of years, and the certain legislation. And I know with COVID, everybody at the moment, and I know the government are very busy in trying to keep people safe, and I understand that. But it's something that we've to make sure isn't forgotten, that these proposals, and I have them at home because I have the report, that these proposals are followed through, and maybe that will help some of these survivors.
Yeah, Mary, thank you very much for giving us your time and for sharing your story with us, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, Elizabeth.